Well, this is a combination of work. There are two papers involved here. One is out in Physica D, and the other is, put it mildly, receiving the attentions of the referee, and the authors, actually, who are trying to respond to the attentions of the referee. And it's a continuation, really, of some work that I did with Chris Jones, who is now in Leeds, a long time ago, in the late 80s, on trying to understand the interactions of spatial patterns due to bifurcations when there's a strong spatial resonance. In fact, some of that work had been done earlier by Gerhard Dangelmeier in a more general case of 1 to n resonance, but in fact Dangelmeier had not noticed one of the interesting things about the 2-1 resonance problem, which I'm going to talk about principally, which is the existence of structurally stable, robust heteroclinic cycles in the normal form. But what I will come to that as an important part of the interesting behavior, but I want to contrast the problem that Chris and I solved, which was the idea there was to have a periodic domain and look for patterns periodic in this domain, but featuring two different wave numbers with a ratio of 1 to 2. So you can either have one wave number, one pattern in the domain, or you can have, I know I always get this wrong, or you get two. More or less, right? Is that wrong?
It's 2.5.
Is that 2.5? Well, you know what I mean. Well, it's right up to here. And then just reflect it. So the solutions we found, the normal form we worked with, were a set of two coupled complex ODEs, and the idea was to find interesting dynamical behavior in time. Now, of course, in a real experiment, you won't get this situation, or you could get the situation if you impose periodic boundary conditions, but if you plot, so I'll show you a subsequent slide, suppose I plot, say, the critical Rayleigh number, if it's a convection experiment, against a wave number for a single mode, then if you arrange your experiment carefully, then you can get double minima in this curve. And if you're very clever in arranging the experimental parameters, you can perhaps arrange for these minima to be at a ratio approximately 1 to 2. But not exactly at 1 to 2. That would be even harder to achieve. And the idea of Chris and I was simply to say, well, we have a quantized domain. Obviously, therefore, we have an exact quantization. We can look for one modes and two modes. Even if they're not at this minimum, it doesn't matter. And then we choose parameters so that the values at 1, which is 1 and 2, are exactly the same here. And that's the multiple bifurcation point we're interested in. But as soon as you go to an extended domain, of course, you don't have that way of ensuring that. And so the optimal modes that may appear may have wave numbers in a ratio which differ from 1 to 2. And typically, that will be the case. So the first question we tried to answer today, or in this paper I'm going to discuss today, is what is the consequence of this ratio not being exactly 1 to 2? And then later, I should talk about the other piece of work, less complete, in which it turns out that interesting spatial behavior can be found even when you've arranged your experiment so that this ratio of the minima, the wave numbers to the minima, is exactly 1 to 2, but that the curvature of these curves is different. Okay? So if these minima have different curvature or different widths, then in principle other kinds of instability can arise which yield spatial modulation of the periodic pattern that you thought you'd started with. So I'm going to talk about both those things. That's an outline of the talk. I'm sorry about the green. I'm told I mustn't use green anymore. But I couldn't think of another better color. So I'm going to talk about model equations for near 2-1 resonance. That's the first thing. And then there are various different interesting solutions of the exactly 2-1 resonant problem, which we can look at the modulational instability of. In other words, we take a problem, a solution, which has a uniform pattern, periodic, and we ask whether it's unstable or not, and the nature of these instabilities. And there are four interesting solutions to this problem. So-called pure mode, which just has one of these bifurcating solutions in it. A mixed mode, which has both, but these are steady patterns. You can also find a uniformly traveling pattern involving both modes. And you can find heteroclinic cycle also involving both modes. there's a bit about behavior at larger amplitudes, and then these other kinds of instability that come from the curvature of the critical curve I will discuss towards the end. I won't say much about this one. So just to recap what I've just said, you can have here's a curve such as I've drawn on the board with two minima, with the minima at a wave number ratio which is close to 2. This is a sort of experiment that one can imagine, and with minimal critical Rayleigh numbers at each minimum that are close to each other. And here, the way I've written it, the ratio of K1 to K2, the two wave numbers, is 1 plus epsilon Q, where actually Q is negative in this diagram, to 2. So the idea is that Q is a small parameter, or epsilon is small, and Q is a mismatch, represents a small mismatch of the critical frequencies from the exact resonance situation. And so you can see what might happen. If there are interesting nonlinear interactions between the modes, then this nonlinear interaction might be expected to favor the exact 1-2 resonance. On the other hand, from the linearized stability theory for each mode separately, that 1-2 resonance may not correspond, or it will not correspond, to optimal wave numbers for the individual bifurcating modes. And so there's a conflict here. So does the system want to have two modes which have the wave numbers at the minimum, or does it want to have resonating modes which are induced by the nonlinear dynamics? And so the answer is, it depends where you are. And I'll say something about that. So I'm going to have a very simple set of equations which involve only two-dimensional disturbances. In other words, only one horizontal direction. So we're not, at this stage, interested at all. I won't talk about the second horizontal dimension that might appear in an experiment. This is a very anisotropic experiment. We assume that all the patterns that appear are functions of the one horizontal coordinate only. Call it X. And so here's the bifurcating solution at the critical point where these minima are the same. Okay, so here you have e to the 2ix from this one, and e to the 1 plus epsilon qix from this one. And the scaling works in such a way that if we take this epsilon for the amplitude of the bifurcating mode, that's an appropriate scaling to connect with this mismatch here. And so we have some vertical eigenfunctions, which I'm not going to talk about, and the complex amplitudes, which depend on some long length scale and long time scale according to this prescription here. And I've scaled x so that the k here, which I haven't written down, is 1. So it corresponds exactly to this picture. So in other words, this critical waveform is 2 rather than 2k. But obviously you could have any ratio close to 2 there. There are some symmetries, very simple sort. So we assume reflectional symmetry and translational symmetry. And so this leads to the following symmetries that you can apply to the equations to tie down the nonlinear terms. So if you take A and B to be their complex conjugates, that's like reflecting in X. And you take a shift in X, and that's like shifting A and B by these complex quantities here. So if you put these into the equations, make sure that the terms you have are equivariant. I'm not going to be too formal about this. It's not in my nature. But these are the terms that will come out once you've applied these symmetries. And the new terms that come from the near resonance are these ones here, A3 and B3. These are completely standard. So double steady state bifurcation. So these are real coefficients, the A's and the B's. These can also be taken to be real. And here you have a dependence on big X, because where you had an epsilon Q little x, which is the same as Q big X. And if Q is 0, you see, then big X disappears, and you can solve this system as a set of ODEs. Then we allow for small deviations. Essentially, we have modulations of the basic periodic pattern by including these terms, which measure the curvature of these critical curves near the minimum. And there are two numbers here, which are both real, but they're not necessarily the same. Although for a large part of this talk, they will be the same by decree. Now, you've already noticed that these terms are cubic, whereas these are quadratic. And so you ask, why is this a consistent expansion scheme? Well, of course, in general, no. quadratic terms will dominate in the immediate neighborhood of the bifurcation. On the other hand, it's very natural to think of A3 and B3 as in some sense small, because in many laboratory experiments, there is a weakly broken symmetry. For example, convection in the laboratory is almost Boussinesque with uniform density and uniform fluid properties, but not quite. And if it is, if there is exact symmetry exists in the system, then these quadratic terms will disappear, of course. So if it is only weakly broken, the quadratic terms will in general appear, but with some small amplitude. And so there is a regime which is plausible in the context of real experiments, where you can regard these as small, and so there's a parameter range where the cubic terms and the quadratic terms are at the same general order of magnitude. Within this general truncated normal form, of course, there are higher order terms that you could include. If this were not the case, then the dominant terms would be this, but by the time you brought in these, really you'd have to include other terms as well. So this allows you to stop here and get sensible results. We could have done 1-3 resonance here. If we'd done 1 and 3, then of course these terms would have been cubic. You'd have had an A bar squared B and an A cubed instead. And so these would have been the same order, and this argument would not have arisen. On the other hand, some of the interesting behavior that occurs in the 2-1 case would not occur then. So this system is not entirely satisfactory because it contains big X. But you can get rid of big X very simply by a change of variable of A. Drop the hats when you made this transition, and you end up with this system, which now doesn't contain X explicitly. And you can see the effects of Q appear here in a change in the linear growth rate. That's not surprising, because when you move away from the minimum, the growth rate goes down because the critical Rayleigh number goes up. And this term here, which is the most important term, which is the true measure of the mismatch in the frequency. So this is what drives the interesting behavior. And I've scaled away A4 by rescaling X. So there's a lot of rescaling gone on here. I've got rid of these numbers, made this one plus 1. This can be either positive or negative, and 1 after suitable scaling, could lead into completely different dynamics. So the plus case has relatively boring dynamics, no heteroclinic cycles, no traveling waves. So I'm not going to talk about it. In real experiments, you can achieve either of these signs by breaking the up-down symmetry in different ways. So, for example, if you take a layer of fluid, which is Boussinesque, but you change some of the boundary conditions at the top and the bottom, so they're not the same, then you will get the minus term here. Whereas if you have non-uniform viscosity or temperature-dependent viscosity, then you can get either sign, but typically you'll get the plus sign. Yeah. So either is possible, depending on your model. But let's talk about the minus one, because firstly, that's what Chris Jones and I looked at, and secondly, because it's more interesting. Of course, that's why we looked at it in the first place. Anyway. So I want to draw your attention to this lovely picture, which is also over there, and I will leave this up so that you can see a bit of what's going on. So the bifurcation problem for the non-modulated case, in other words, where there's no big X dependence at all, has amazingly rich behavior, which is summarized for a particular set of parameters in this diagram here. So I just want, this is mu1, mu2, and down here, this is the origin of mu1 is here. So this is essentially the upper half plane in mu1, mu2 space. There is more stuff going on for negative mu2 and positive mu1, but nothing when mu1 and mu2 are both negative. So down here you have a mode where just B, if I remind you of the picture, in fact, if I put that no, I'll refer to this. Does everybody see this, or is it a bit faint? Is it okay?
Too small.
How can I make it bigger? Yeah, but that's got an equation on it. Never mind. I could write the equations on the board. It's good to have a co-author with a brain. which co-author is that? I don't want to say, really. So the cubic terms, which you can all fill in, Okay. No, those are easy. Plus A bar B.
Next term is the most important.
Yes. I got that right? Yeah. So minus here. All right. Well, I'll sort that up. But I'll talk about this over here. Okay, you have a pure mode here where only B is non-zero. Okay, so that's the shorter period. And then there is a period, spatial period, doubling bifurcation, where A appears. And then you get mixed modes. There are two kinds of mixed mode, depending on the relative phases of A and B. And this is one of them, one that appears here. And then as you further increase mu 1 at fixed mu 2, two different things can happen. The first is that you have this mixed mode can lose stability to a standing wave where the amplitudes of A and B oscillate, but there's no change in the phases. Or up here, this line that says TW, if you follow it along up here, bifurcation here. Ignore these dotted lines, by the way, that say things like LW. I'm coming to those in a minute. The solid lines you should look at. You cross this line, and then you get a bifurcation, which is a pitchfork bifurcation, which yields traveling wave solutions of permanent form. So you have both modes. Left-right symmetry is broken. You can have waves traveling in either direction at constant speed. And further things can happen. It's all very complicated. And off this picture, you can also have a structurally stable, I don't think it's on this picture. No, it's not. A structurally stable homoclinic cycle, heteroclinic cycle, which I'll explain later. And lots of other things too. So I recommend reading this paper, which has a lot of detail, and also this paper, which has a lot of detail. Both papers are wrong when they talk about the structurally stable cycle. They both make different mistakes. And the only correct solution is provided by Keith Julian, actually, in his thesis. I don't think it was ever written up. Who got the right answer? At least near the origin. But leaving that aside, you can see a very complicated picture here. And the question is, how is this changed by this mismatch of natural frequencies given by the parameter Q? As you might imagine, it will reduce the stability, the regions of stability of these different sorts of solution. So we just start at the beginning and go on until the end, and then we stop. So we start at the simplest mode and discuss its stability. This is very easy. So this is related to earlier work by Coulet and his students, who looked at the influence of an imposed periodic disturbance on a bifurcation to a steady state bifurcation with translational symmetry. So this is a bit like this. The pure mode you can think of as the imposed corrugation of the boundaries, and then you ask for the instabilities that appear. That's already existing. And then, in fact, the analysis is much the same. Because we have a non-zero solution. The pure mode has B non-zero and A equals zero. And we're going to assume that C, the ratio of diffusivities, is equal to 1. Because that's not generic, anyway. But it turns out that when C is not equal to 1, you can have instability even when Q is naught. That's a different sort of instability I want to discuss later. So for simplification of the analysis, we put C equal to 1 in what follows. But we could continue to do this for C not equal to 1. It just is more complicated and mixes up the two sorts of instability. So B is a constant, A is 0. Look at the linear stability of this case. So A can be written in this form here. And B has its basic state plus perturbations. And these are decoupled, actually, and you can check that the perturbations to B, when linearized, disappear. So we have just regard B as given, and we ask for instabilities involving A. And there are criteria which separate two different sorts of stability. If mu 2 is large enough on this picture, then the first instability... Yes. The first instability has zero wave number. And so that is precisely the instability on this solid line here. But when mu2 is too small, as you see in this blow up, so this is an expansion in the vertical of this picture. The range in mu1 is the same, but the range in mu2 is divided by about 10. So you can see what's going on. So it's, everything is down here. Here's the point L, here's the point L. Okay, so if you're below this point L, then the first instability you see is not the one that you've got without modulation, but another one with a non-zero wave number, little l. That's what I've said here. So if mu2 is sufficiently small, depending on q, you get the first instability to finite l on this line, which is a straight line going through the origin. Yeah, this dotted line. And these meet at a particular point, depending on q, which is marked l on the figure. So Lifshitz point. The gradients of these of the two curves, this straight line, and the solid curve are the same. So you have a smooth transition. And at this point, if you look at the normal form in the neighborhood of that point, you expand around the point, you get this equation for a real amplitude A, nothing to do with this A up here. And this is apparently called the extended Fischer-Kolmogorov equation. It's like the Swift-Hermberg equation, actually, except it has two independent parameters. But you can, so it's got more structure than the Swift-Hermberg equation, but otherwise it's really quite similar. And to the canonical Swift-Hermberg equation.
But nu2 is allowed to be positive.
Nu2 is allowed to be positive, so I mean that makes a big difference. Put that right way around. I mean, either nu1 or nu2 can be positive or negative, so you can cover everything around the critical point. And although this can be shown to have steady solutions, no periodic solutions to the system, they can be very complicated in spatial form. We heard Alan Chapney talking about systems like this the other day and how complicated they can be. So there's an enormous amount of possible behaviors, interesting possible behaviors, in the neighborhood of this point L, and by extension, presumably, farther away as well. And really, the message of this talk is that extending the problem in this way yields lots and lots of rich behavior, which we haven't fully investigated, but can be related to equations that other people have investigated and found very complicated. So we can take the mixed mode now. So this is this M plus mode, okay, where A and B are non-zero. We can ask how it loses stability. Okay, so we have A and B can be taken as real in this case, and to satisfy this pair of coupled equations. So we can, in principle, solve for R0 and S0 as functions of mu1, mu2, and q. These have no x dependence. And then we write A is R0 plus a disturbance, and similarly for B. And we get coupled equations for the growth rate lambda, and it's a quartic dispersion relation. It's a fourth order problem, of course, for the growth rate lambda. So along the line LT, which is here, if you increase mu1, so you start here and it's unstable, you get M plus is stable up here. So if you cross this line, you lose stability in a steady state bifurcation. On the other hand, on another line, which I've marked TS here, you have a Hopf bifurcation. You cross that line, then you lose stability. I think I've got that the right way around. John will correct me, but I think that's right. And you could then do the same business near the point S, where the Hopf bifurcation meets this line of standing waves, which is a Hopf bifurcation without modulation. And you get even more complicated behavior around here, because you can reduce the system to the complex version of the EFK, which is has exactly the same sort of terms, but now a complex variable A and complex coefficients. And I know nothing about the investigation of this system. Maybe some people have done some bits of it, but it must be amazingly complicated, because even leading out this term here, as we know, is rather difficult. That's the Landau-Ginzburg equation. And even all the details of that haven't been sorted, let alone the effects of a fourth-order derivative. In fact, you can get to a situation on the point T where there are two sorts of bifurcation, namely the steady-state bifurcation and the Hopf bifurcation, and those two lines cross at T. So a k-dimension two-point, they bifurcate simultaneously. So you can see here, this dotted line represents the hot bifurcation. I've got that the right way around, yes. This is the real part of the growth rate for the oscillatory mode. And as you increase L, which is the wave number of the disturbance, this mode, of course, the two complex eigenvalues coalesce, and now you have two real eigenvalues, and one of them can move up to zero. So this is just at the point T. So you have a double zero eigenvalue with two different wave numbers unrelated to each other, simultaneously marginal, this one oscillatory and this one steady state. You also have a zero eigenmode associated with the translation invariance of the whole pattern, which of course is never a growing mode, but as our eminent colleagues Cox and Matthews know very well, adding this sort of marginal mode to a system of this kind can in fact destabilize more simple patterns when nonlinear interactions are taken into account. And so here you have the possibility of a Cox-Matthews type instability with the added excitement of a hot bifurcation at a different wave number. So again, we haven't investigated this, but this is complicated enough. And all the eigenvalues, there are four, because this is a double eigenvalue, it's a quartic system, these are all the eigenvalues of this one, 1, 2, 3, 4. So all the eigenvalues are zero at that point. And so you can see it's quite degenerate. How am I doing for time? Plenty of time. Long wavelength travelling mode. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about travelling solutions. So I've talked about instabilities of steady solutions. Now I'm going to move on and look at points X and Y, wherever they are. Ah, yes. X is up here and Y is here. Okay. So what you see here between points X and Y, you see a dotted line marked LW extending to the left of all these other solid lines. And this is the line along which there is a bifurcation to a mode which travels and has spatial dependence. So both these things happen at once. You break the left-right symmetry in such a way that the new bifurcated mode has spatial structure, is a modulation of the original steady pattern. But let's first remind ourselves that you can also have such a bifurcation without any modulation. So if you go back to these equations, you can check that there is a line TW, also marked on the figure, which has the following properties. R squared, which is the amplitude of A squared, is twice the amplitude of B squared. And if this is true, then, provided certain other conditions are met, you can have a solution where the phase differences, taking account of the wave numbers, are constant, but not zero, so that one pattern is shifted relative to the other, and because of this shift, the left-right symmetry is broken, and the pattern travels. So the speed of the pattern is related to the value of chi. So phi dot, I can't remember exactly how it goes, but phi dot is proportional to chi. So this is a traveling pattern without modulation. But this doesn't come in first, as long as you're between the points X and Y. What comes in first is a modulated travelling pattern. And we can look, in fact, near the point X, which is the higher point up here. So what happens at X? It's a bit hard to see. In fact, it's impossible to say it's a bit hard to see is an English understatement. It is impossible to see what is going on. You have two lines. You have this line, and you have another line. And they cross at X. Okay, this is the long wave line, and this is the traveling wave line. So that is what is happening near X. And so what you'd expect is that down here, as you increase mu 1, you will first see these modulated traveling waves, and up here, you won't. So let's look at, try and expand about the point X. And then we can derive a reduced system by a bit of scaling and adiabatic elimination, as we all know how to do, involving some small parameter which measures the distance from the critical point at X. So the values mu1 and mu2 defining the point X, and we expand away from them with a small parameter epsilon. It's a new small parameter. The phases are small, so the wave speed is slow in some sense. Chi is very small, But nonetheless, we'll come into the analysis. So putting all these expansions into the equations, expanding R and S in powers of epsilon squared, scaling X and T appropriately. So these are very long wavelengths, very slow. Everything is happening very slowly on an enormous time scale. But nonetheless, it's non-trivial. So there's the same picture I drew. And in this new reduced space, so this origin here is the point X. And we have to make particular choices of the coefficients, of course. Well, otherwise, these expressions would become very complicated. So we've chosen these numbers for the nonlinear coefficients. And you can see what is going on here. So let's ignore for the moment all the x dependence, the big x dependence. Then this equation is very simple. This says theta dot is a fifth of chi. So that means the pattern travels at one fifth of this value chi. So these are the traveling waves without modulation. And you can see that the chi equation, without any x dependence, so without any x dependence, we throw away all these terms, we only get left with this one. And this says that chi dot is positive if this is positive and negative if it's negative. What this model does not contain, this reduced normal form, it does not contain a term involving the cube of chi, which would restabilize the bifurcation if this quantity is positive. That's because it's out of scale. The amplitude of chi for a traveling wave is much larger than in this normal form. This normal form is produced so as to identify the role of the LW mode, which is modulated. So there's no way of including both. But you can see then, without any x dependence, this is the bifurcation that leads to traveling waves at this line. And this line corresponds to the line marked TW down here. If you include x dependence, then you get a different picture. So you can expand, you can linearize the system, ignore these nonlinear terms here, and linearize the system. And then you discover there's another bifurcation where this is zero, I think. I'll come to the next stride and I'll confirm that, which corresponds to the line LW. So it turns out, so I've said it all here, so the M plus states correspond to zero chi and constant theta. So the bifurcation to the traveling waves occurs when L is naught, and this is zero, as long as this is negative, otherwise the other mode comes in first. The modulated mode comes in when this is, sorry, there's a combination of modes that comes in. So this is now the ratio that you're looking for, as long as this is negative, so that the traveling wave is stable. So that defines two sides of this diagram. On this side, long waves appear first, and on the other side, it's traveling waves. But in fact, firstly, let me say that you can get rid of the chi mode if you are in the right part of parameter space, to investigate the nonlinear dynamics of the long wave mode. You can see, you can get rid of that mode, and if you do that, you end up with a canonical equation of this kind, and you notice immediately that this equation is precisely the same equation as appears when you discuss the nonlinear evolution of the Eckhaus instability, or periodic patterns, and we know all about that. In particular, we know that this is a subcritical instability. And so the long wave instability is subcritical. So I've only drawn the linear stability diagram here, but in fact, you might expect long waves, long modulated waves, to extend to the left of this line for some distance. And even when TW are preferred, so when traveling waves could be preferred according to linear theory, but if the long wave instability is subcritical, maybe up here you can also find stable long waves. And we haven't done an enormous amount of analysis of that. There's a computer picture here, John prepared, where you have a transition from, just got to remember what all these things mean, the transient growth of a TW mode. So you look at theta, which is theta, I can't read it. Help. A and B. Well, A and B are constant here. There's obviously a change happening here. I'm sorry, I can't read these things. So I can't remember which one is theta. Chi.
It must be the up and right.
Is this one here?
C,
you think, this one.
So I think those are probably theta and chi.
Yes, I just can't read.
Those are the amplitudes.
Can I read them here? That's the question. Ooh, I don't know. Okay. The bottom left measures the spatial gradients of A and B. So down here, there are no spatial gradients of A and B, essentially. So this represents an unmodulated pattern. And then there's the growth of spatial gradients up here. And now you have something which is essentially independent of time, but involves spatial gradients. So here we have a modulated solution. And this is in a region where this diagram would predict that traveling waves are stable and the other ones don't come in. So this shows that you can have subcritical bifurcation to modulated modes. And because these mod AX squared and mod BX squared are non-zero in this range, we can see that there is indeed a periodic pattern there. It's a bit hard to establish what these other things are. I think this here is where there's a traveling wave. Is that right?
So the figure caption has the...
Yeah, but that's true.
The initial transient growth...
So this is theta. So theta is constant. Chi solid.
So the phase difference is the solid line.
Yes. The phase difference is the solid line, which doesn't seem to be doing anything. Okay. Oh, I see what's happening. Okay, no, I beg your pardon. Let me say something. I didn't say it correctly. This is just the pure mode. Here we have the production of actually space dependence as well, but some sort of traveling wave mode, and you can see the phase increasing because it's modulo 2 pi. It's just got discontinuities. So this is the phase modulo 2 pi. It just goes on increasing uniformly. At this stage, it stops increasing, and you end up with a steady state, in fact. But this is modulated because at this point you have... non-zero gradients of A and B. So although the traveling wave would appear to be the only possible instability, linear instability of the mixed mode, what you end up with is a steady state, actually in this case non-traveling modulated mode. So it's not quite clear where the traveling modulated modes went, but they've gone.
So this is a simulation of what?
This is a simulation of these equations. Yeah. That's interesting. So that's a picture of the... This is a picture of the steady state you get, which is highly non-uniform in space. So you've got plenty of gradients, but not uniformly distributed. It's not just a periodic in X, high period in X. This is the period of the simulation. It is indeed periodic with that period, but it has a sort of kink in it. So it's trying to accommodate more wiggles in one pattern than in the other, and succeeding by having a kink. That's the steady solution of the problem. So... Yeah, this problem involves many... This is a highly nonlinear situation with many different wave numbers, so obviously it can't be addressed looking at the linear stability of uniform patterns. Now we come to the heteroclinic cycle. I realise time is pressing on. You're not going to shut me off at 10 o'clock, are you? Because you're really interested in this and you just want to carry on. Where am I going to do this over here? Board rubber. So this system, famously... is an example of a system with a robust heteroclinic cycle. So I can draw... I'm never very good at drawing these things, but if I draw... draw a three-dimensional phase space, even though it's four-dimensional, so I'm projecting onto three dimensions, I'm going to put some fixed points on here. These are pure modes. One is B positive and the other has B negative, and in all other respects they're identical. And if you choose a subspace in which A and B are real, you discover that this one, say, in the appropriate parameter range, is a saddle point, and this is a sink. And so you get a trajectory in the right parameter range that looks like this. So that's in the board, in the plane of the board. But in another plane, at right angles to that, this is a saddle, and this is a sink. And so out of the picture, in a different color... If only a different colour were to be had. Oh, yes. So this is now coming out of the board. And because these bits of the cycle line invariant subspaces of the equations, this is structurally stable. You change the parameters a bit and it's still there. The way it appears is where, I mean, there's a fixed point here, which represents one of the mixed modes, and there's you have a limit cycle here, and eventually the trajectory from here stops going to the limit cycle and comes around here instead. Once it's crossed, it has to go to this point. So it does appear at a well-defined point, and then it stays around for a while, and it can become unstable in a variety of ways. But let's look at a situation where this is actually stable, and then ask, what is the effect of changing Q? All right. Now, the point is that if there's some modulational, if you're very close to this cycle, then you spend a lot of time near these fixed points, these pure modes. And in the presence of modulation, it's clear that you're not going to be able to continue to spend a lot of time near these pure modes if the mismatch in frequency is such that you're going to get a modulational instability of this pure mode. So you might imagine that non-zero Q would destroy these cycles and render them unstable. They still exist, of course. So within this system are perfectly x-independent solutions. So within the x-independent subspace, you still have a structurally stable cycle. But as soon as you have modulation introduced, then the system will eventually slip away from this cycle and move to something which has space dependence. The question is, what? Can we quantify this in any way? So now, we expect the unmodulated cycle to be unstable when Q is not equal to naught. And what we should really be doing then is to do linear stability analysis of the cycle, which is very difficult, of course, and include nonlinear effects and discover just how far away from the cycle the system restabilizes. But that's very difficult. So instead of that, John invented this very clever mapping method which sweeps everything of any difficulty under the carpet, which is wonderful, which is just what everybody wants. So I can't claim any credit for this. It's very good. I mean, I would if I could, but sadly I can't. What you find is that you do simulations, I'll show you. Excuse me. You get periodic orbits appearing, which are... I've come out. Excuse me. Thank you. You get periodic orbits in simulations, I mean, otherwise periodic in time and modulated in space. So let's assume we're close to the orbits, because that's what happens if Q is sufficiently small, then these orbits appear near the fixed points in some sense. So if you're near the fixed point, then you're almost at the fixed point, right, obviously, and therefore you spend a long time in that neighborhood. And we're going to discuss how long you spend. But because we spend almost all the time there, you only have to be interested in what is going on during those times. And so you're interested in what's happening near this point, takes a long time, and then the system zips over to this other point, or near this other point, in a very short time, and you don't have to worry about the evolution there. It's negligible compared to what is going on in the long times near the fixed point. So we can linearize the system, is the idea, about the fixed points, and look at one wave number of disturbance, and here are the parameters. You see L, the wave number of disturbance, is put in here. So we're imagining a disturbance with one wave number L, and look at the linear stability of the fixed points to that mode. And this gives you the following matrix, which will calculate the stability from the eigenvalues. And you can see the L dependence here, and crucially here. Now, these P's are saddles, and the stability of the heteroclinic cycle when Q is naught means you have to have two eigenvalues with opposite sign, and one of them has got to have modulus less than the other. And this implies that A naught is negative when L is equal to naught. So we know that this is true in the range of interest. So that's the only thing we do know, but we know that. So now, the time spent there, each cycle is T. There are two bits. Yeah. So when I say each cycle, I think I meant each fixed point. I'm sorry. This means fixed point, not cycle. Each fixed point. They're both the same, essentially. And so you apply the matrix, the mapping, twice. One mapping to discuss the dynamics near here, and then the other mapping to to discuss the dynamics near here. Once you've done it twice, then you're back near the same fixed point as you were. And you can ask how this change, how this time, well, come to that in a minute. What has happened in the interim? Okay, so there's a mapping now, which is a combination of these two maps, and you can put them together. You just have a matrix now, 2x2 matrix, with the following entries. It's anti-symmetric, as the other ones were, and with these parameters depending on the variables Q hat, which depend on Q and L. So when Q is naught, you can see the off-diagonal terms vanish, and the eigenvalues of the matrix are e to the 2a0t, where t is the time spent. And we know a0 is negative, right? So you're contracting onto the cycle, which is exactly what we wanted. If Q is not equal to naught, then if t is large enough, then t comes into the picture. And some of these bits, you know, like the Qs, you see, don't depend on t, whereas t does depend on t. So if t is a sufficiently large, which means you're sufficiently close to the orbit, then you find that the eigenvalues can have modulus greater than 1. But if t is very small, which means you're a long way from the orbit, then they have a modulus less than 1. So this suggests that there may be a t which you can define, which called t final, which the modulus of the eigenvalues, an eigenvalue at least, is equal to 1. And this gives an estimate of the size of t you would expect to find in your periodic orbit, and therefore, indirectly, the size of the departure from the original unmodulated cycle. So you don't have to do any nonlinear work. So how have you got so far with doing so little? I mean, people say this to me all the time in other contexts. The point is that we're making a crucial assumption here, which is that the periodic orbit that you find is dominated by one wave number, L. And as I'll show you, that's really quite far from the case, except very, very close. I mean, I'll show you a picture which shows it isn't. So that is an approximation. And to do the thing properly, you really have to do a proper perturbation theory. But this gives you a good guide to the period of these periodic orbits, and therefore, implicitly, to the size of the deviation from the unmodulated fixed point. So if you take these equations and let Q go to 0, say this Q hat go to 0, and you have a large T, then you can balance the terms to get eigenvalues of modulus 1, and this is the balance that you get. So you can see that T depends on the logarithm of Q hat. So this Q hat goes to 0, T hat goes to infinity, and you approach this heteroclinic cycle. So you can compare that with simulations, of course. Here's a numerical simulation. This has many Fourier modes. In fact, there aren't very many Fourier modes in this picture, which seems significant. These are really quite small numbers here, although you can't read them. But if you look here, the beginning of this shows the approach to the heteroclinic cycle without modulation, because you can see the intervals where things are changing. This represents visiting the fixed point P, or its mirror image. And the times it spends nearby get longer and longer. But then something new happens, and it moves away from this orbit to a periodic solution, which has spatial modulation. And these are terms involving spatial modulation. You can see they grow from tiny levels to order 1 levels by the end. But in fact, all these are about the same sort of order. And so the spatial picture is going to be quite complicated, although the temporal picture is quite simple. And here's what you get by comparing the observed values of t for given q, with fixing all the other parameters, against numerical simulations. So I don't understand these, the way these graphics are rendered. I mean, on my screen, they're all the same color. Very strange. So these black squares represent the experiments, numerical experiments, and also these triangles, the two different sets of parameters. And the dotted lines and the solid line represent an exact solution of that map, and the symbols on the lines represent the asymptotic formula, which I showed you. So the asymptotic formula is very good as a solution of the full equations, sufficiently small q, and the outturn of the numerical experiments, at least in this case, is amazingly good. There's just a shift in t, and of course we've ignored a lot of things. As I say, we've ignored multiple values of L, we've ignored any linear transformation that we might have perhaps wanted to include to do with this shift here. So I mean, there's a lot there which we would, you know, you could add to make this correction. Unfortunately, the correction gets worse. It would be nice to say, it's 10 to the minus I. So Q is getting larger this way. So the relative shift is getting smaller as you go out this way, as Q gets smaller. So small Q is where we hope it works, it does seem to. Whereas here, it does seem sort of to work for small Q. There's something embarrassing here, which is not understood. And there's some evidence that this line has a different slope, but we don't understand that either. But this is very good. And if we were astronomers, we would leave this line out. And in fact, we'd only put 3 points, because that would be sufficient for a theory, right? This is the astronomical way to do it. But we're not like that. We're honest. So we show you even the warts. So here's the spatial dependence during this periodic orbit. And you can see it's spatially very complicated. So A and B are plotted here, dashed and solid. And you see many wave numbers take up the space. So the spatial picture is very complicated, but the temporal picture is periodic, and we seem to be able to predict the period reasonably well. So I think that's quite a success, actually. I'm going to pass on that. I'll just show you, though, that there are parameter ranges where you can get two different sorts of behavior. And so here, this represents a convergence to a traveling wave solution of uniform A and uniform B. Hasn't quite got there yet, but it's getting there. If you extended this calculation further, then A and B would be independent of position and time. The modulus would be independent of time. That just represents a traveling wave solution. But also, for different initial conditions, you can get these spatiotemporal structures appearing. For the same parameters, I don't know what the parameters are because I didn't write them down. But for a non-zero Q, you could induce these structures. And these are stable, and so are these, depending on where you start. So now, in the last... could I have another 10 minutes? Just to discuss the different sort of instabilities that can occur when Q is naught. So now we put Q equal to naught, and then you might think, well, there's nothing going on here. There's no mismatch of frequencies. And so what is the mechanism which is driving a breakdown of a periodic solution? And the answer is, it's a Turing-type mechanism, such as many people are familiar with in chemical kinetics, that if you have two interacting chemical species which diffuse at different rates, then in some circumstances, even though you have a stable fixed point, which is spatially uniform, it can be unstable to finite wave number disturbances. And these were first investigated by Turing in chemical models, but the method of solving is exactly the same for this problem, except that the equations are more complicated because they're complex amplitudes. So there's nothing new theoretically here, just it hasn't been noticed that this can happen. And indeed, the curvatures, as I've written, I've changed the notation a bit, I'm sorry. You have to apologize for that. I'll have to apologize for that. You won't have to apologize. I will apologize to you for having slightly different notation. But since I didn't write down the cubic terms, it's all right. So I'm going to leave these as they are because I'm going to allow plus and minus here. I'm going to allow n to be anything, although previously I've let n be 2. And I'm just going to call these kappa 1 and kappa 2. So kappa 2 is like C. Kappa 1 can be made equal to 1. Doesn't matter. So, and I've used a new parameter, gamma. So C and gamma are related by this simple relation here. So let's have... Suppose we can find a stable mixed mode, like M plus. Okay, now Q is naught now, so all the dotted lines on this picture disappear. So in some region where M plus is stable, and then we can look for its linear stability. I mean, in this traditional way, and similarly for B, and you linearize, and you get, of course, a fourth order determinant for the eigenvalues. But in the case where Q is naught, this determinant splits into two parts, which makes it tractable. And that's why we did it in two bites of the cherry on this problem, because you can actually do this bit easily, whereas the fourth order problem is harder to analyze, harder to separate two different mechanisms of instability. So here you have two different second order problems. This matrix involves really the amplitudes of A and B, and this is the one which is directly analogous to the Turing instability. So all this analysis can be performed when A and B remain real. And so these just become two real equations. On the other hand, this matrix is relevant in respect of the phase of A and B. So Turing instabilities are associated with hot bifurcations. And one boundary of a Turing instability range is always a hot bifurcation. And this instability, when it comes, is associated with the bifurcation to standing waves, which don't affect the amplitudes. Curve here. Whereas this one here is associated with the bifurcation to travelling waves, which are essentially a phase phenomenon. Now, the bifurcation to travelling waves is, of course, not a hot bifurcation, and you'll see this has curious features not shared by the system here. Nothing happened. Now, this is where we have to switch. This is a problem with Acrobat Reader. I blame Acrobat Reader. It's clearly not my fault. This has gone wrong. But luckily, I have a backup. It's not as pretty, but you can see the pictures. Okay. So I'm sorry about the fonts. This is Ghost View now. So there are two blocks. The first block corresponds to the so-called amplitude or Turing instability, which onsets at finite wave number. Okay, so this is not a long wave length instability. This comes in at a finite wave number. It's a long wave compared to the basic pattern, but it's finite. And it's determined by the ratio of diffusivities and all the other parameters in the problem. The other one, the second one, corresponds to a phase instability, and it's associated with the translational invariance of the problem. So the second block onsets at an infinitely large wave number. So that is like a long wavelength instability of the pattern. And I just show as an example here, so these pictures are analogous to this picture for different choices of the nonlinear coefficients. So it's mu1, mu2 space, and the pale shading indicates, if I've got it the right way around, indicates the amplitude instability, and the dark shading indicates the phase instability. I think I've got that the right way around, but it might be the other way. Doesn't really matter from this point of view. The point is that by choosing the parameters appropriately, what you might think of... what I should say is that this picture here only covers the top half of the diagram. So this the bottom half of these diagrams refers to the stability of the other mixed mode, M minus, which I haven't even discussed over there. So just concentrate on the top half of the picture, if you like. And this is for N equals 2. So these two pictures are directly comparable to this picture over here. And this curve here is like the standing wave instability that you see on that picture. So in this case, you have... I wish I could remember which way around I'd done it, but I can't. I think, actually, this is the phase instability, and this is the amplitude instability. But by judicious choice of parameters, you can achieve either instability, or sometimes both simultaneously, for the same values of mu1 and mu2. This is for the 1-3 case. This has the... technical merit that all the interaction terms are cubic, and so all the stability boundaries are straight lines in mu1 and mu2 space. So they're easier to plot. A similar sort of picture appears here, with one stability or another, or both. In this case, you have both, and it's very dark. So this is quite light, a bit dark, very dark. So here you have both coming in, here you have just one coming in, here you have just one coming in. So this is a very complicated problem. It's very difficult to catalogue in all its variety, and we haven't really got very far with that. We just wanted to show that it was possible, by choosing the nonlinear coefficients, to get into this situation where modulations were possible even when Q is equal to 0. Yeah, have I changed the page here? So, as I said, this is not like the Q instabilities, which will always occur for sufficiently large Q. They're not guaranteed. So for some problems, you'll never see them, and for some, you will. And the Turing mode is harder to find and often exists along with the amplitude mode. But you can, in principle, find them both. If you look at the phase equation, the phase mode, and look at its nonlinear instability, because it's a long wavelength instability, you can do an expansion, an asymptotic expansion in that wavelength, or one over that wavelength, to yield a self-consistent nonlinear equation for the development of the phase. So here's the phase theta of the A mode, and it obeys this equation, which differs from the Eckhaus equation by having a square here. This is the Kahn-Hilliard equation, and its properties are quite well known. If beta is positive, then you can have the solutions remain bounded, and you have additionally growth of a disturbance with the maximum growth rate that's given, as long as theta is nu is positive and rho is positive. If everything is positive, all these coefficients are positive, then you have growth at some growth rate, finite growth rate, but after a very long time, these modes are taken over by modes of longer wavelength, and eventually you get the longest possible wavelength allowed in the system. If beta is less than naught, on the other hand, excuse me, you have a subcritical instability, and defects appear in the pattern. And it turns out that both are possible. So we either have beta positive or beta negative, and we've looked in parameter space to find regions where beta is positive and beta is negative. This is for n equals 3. It's 3-1 instability. And in fact, how we've done this is we've chosen the value of A and varied alpha 1 and B naught when fixing n equals 3 and a naught equals 1. This is enough to pin everything down. So it's a very funny plane to look at it, but just to show you that if you choose your coefficients wisely, then you can find both supercritical, which is the pale shading, and subcritical instability in different parts of the parameter space. And where it's white, it's not unstable. So a very complicated picture here, and these curves that delineate the boundaries where the instability changes from super to subcritical can't be found analytically, must be found numerically. Now you can also look at the travelling waves when Q is equal to naught and ask if they can be unstable to instabilities due to C not being able to equal to 1. And now you're back to the full complexity of the problem, actually. You now have a fourth order dispersion relation to solve for the eigenvalues, and you can't separate it, so you have to do it numerically. But it turns out that you can find modulational instabilities of Turing sort, a finite wave number, I think, for travelling waves. And what you have here is two different sorts of instability. What you have here, this is so for n equals 3, particular value of mod a, you're looking at the stability of travelling waves, which are given by this result here. So the relationship between the two amplitudes for a travelling wave is given by this equation here. And that's why alpha 1 and alpha 2 have to have opposite sign for two different sets of nonlinear parameters and different ratios of the diffusivities. So in this case, small, in this case, large. And if you get large ratios, you get different dependencies of the different parts of the parameter space where instability occurs. We're just going to have to give it out the last line. And so the Turing instability of these modes is given by the black shading. So there is a possibility of Turing instability in those regions there of parameter space, whereas over here they become unstable due to a different Hopf bifurcation without modulation, which we haven't discussed at all today. So those three modes definitely are subject to Turing type or phase type related to Turing instabilities, even when there's no frequency mismatch. We haven't looked at, and it might be interesting to look at, I suppose, if there's any possibility of the structurally stable cycles similarly being unstable, but we haven't done it. And we don't know if we can. I think that's probably the last page, so let me just go back to the this one. These figures are enormous. I guess that's part of the problem. So what are my conclusions? That in these resonant bifurcation problems, it's easy to find periodic solutions. Sorry, periodic in space, that is. Steady or oscillatory in time. But they can become unstable in two completely different ways in extended systems, even with only one space variable available to you. Two types. One due to breaking of the exact resonance in the minimum curves, which is the Q effect, and the other due to these Turing-like mechanisms, which are to do with curvature of the minimum curves, even if they're perfectly aligned. They're quite different mechanisms. You'd have very rich and complex dynamics near, at least we know, near special points in the parameter space. We can reduce our problem to equations which are known to have very complicated behavior. And so already we know that these new effects are going to lead to very complicated behavior. And particularly, it's interesting to look at the destabilization of the heteroclinic cycle, because if you're trying to do an experiment to see the heteroclinic cycle, then you have to accept these mismatches and so on. And we've given some predictions then about what you might expect to see. And finally, a caveat that we've assumed that our disturbances that we allow to our periodic solutions, spatially periodic solutions, only depend on one space variable. Now, if we were doing an experiment in a square box, for example, and rolls in one direction, but we could ask for what happened to modes of disturbance that had dependence on y, the other horizontal direction. And it turns out that these modes become more unstable when you allow, it's not really surprising, when you allow three-dimensional instabilities. In fact, it's rather crude what happens. I don't want to discuss it, but suffice to say that most of the stuff I've discussed goes away and is hidden by more vigorous instabilities when you allow that extra dimension. So what we've said is not really probably very appropriate to an isotropic sort of experiment, but to a confined one in one direction. So a narrow annulus or a thin box where the system is anisotropic and only rolls in one direction are allowed. But thank you. That's it. Alistair.
To see the heteroclinic cycle in the amplitude equation, you've got to set the x dependence to zero. Is that right?
Yes. That's what we think, isn't it?
If you set q zero, You still have the second derivative terms. Then the cycle is still stable.
Okay.
Do we know this, even for c not equal to 1?
We haven't checked that for c not equal to 1. But it would be easy.
Yeah.
Does the cycle still exist in the original system?
It always exists. It's like taking your system and imposing periodic boundary conditions.
But if Q isn't zero, you can't.
Yes, you can.
Periodic boundary condition. But
that's what you're doing here. Is you're imposing, putting non-zero Q, means that you take AX to be zero and BX to be zero in the system. So it doesn't matter what Q is. What that corresponds to. Is you have your double curve, and you take two points that have ratio exactly 1 to 2.
Right.
So there's always a solution like that, but it may not be stable. Okay. So as you change this, it's like changing Q.
But does the heteroclinic cycle sort of exist in large domains?
Yeah. You can always find a periodic pattern, a periodic solution with some period. I mean, within a range. Yeah? Yeah? And if you insist that the period is very different from what you first thought of, then that's like changing the parameters, like changing mu 1, so that you move outside the stable range, and then you won't see it. But there must be an order 1 length of box, as it were, a periodic box in which you would see it. Coffee.
Yes. Anybody would like to give another talk? There's a lot, spare slot going next Thursday. Don't all shout at once.
We're all talked up.